Ariel Helwani's MMA show is presented by Modelo, brewed for those with a fighting spirit.
Hello, friends. It's your old pal, Ariel Helwani. Yes, I'm back. It is Wednesday, and that means it's time for another Helwani Show podcast. We weren't going to leave you hanging, of course. I hope you're all doing well, and we've got a great show planned for all of you. Matter of moments, I'll be joined by New York Rick, Mark Raimondi, TST. We got a lot to discuss, of course, so stay tuned. Thanks for joining us. But before we get to today's show, let me tell you about our good friends over at Ancestry DNA. Yes, we love Ancestry. They've been an actual, like, sports news item. They've been in the news, especially in the MMA news, right? Luis Peña, Violent Bob Ross. He found his family via Ancestry DNA. How crazy is that? We talked about that a couple of weeks on the show. Anyway, as you know, Ancestry DNA can reveal ethnic origins and provide historical details that bring unique family stories to life. Ancestry DNA doesn't just tell you which countries you're from, but also can pinpoint the specific regions within them, giving you insightful geographic detail about your history. Trace the paths of your recent ancestors and learn how and why your family moved from place to place around the world. No other DNA test delivers such a unique interactive experience. It's easy to start making discoveries with Ancestry, so grab an Ancestry DNA kit right now and start a free trial to amplify your discoveries. Start exploring your family story today. Yes, I said today. Isn't this a great time to do that? Head to our URL at Ancestry.com/MMA. That's Ancestry.com/MMA to get your Ancestry DNA kit and start your free trial. That's Ancestry.com/MMA. Once again, that is Ancestry.com/MMA. Also, I want to give a shout out to our friends over at ZipRecruiter. Yes, ZipRecruiter, the best teams start with great talent, but finding the right people can be a challenge. You think City Kickboxing or American Top Team became the best gyms for fighters overnight? Heck no. Of course not. It takes time to find and develop the likes of Israel Adesanya, Jorge Masvidal, Colby Covington, who wrote this, TST, and so many more. And so if you want to build an award-winning team, when you're hiring for your business, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidates and fast, from healthcare to manufacturing to business services and a whole lot more. And now you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 top job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Yes, I said the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And one last thing before I go, even though much of the sports world is on hold, it doesn't mean ESPN is taking a hiatus from serving sports fans. Heck no. Anytime, anywhere. That's what we do. So check out the SV Pod by my friend Scott Van Pelt, the great SVP. Also check out Mina Kimes' pod, the Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny, her dog, and also ESPN Daily. Ton out there to help you pass the time, so have no fear. All right, check those out wherever you get your podcasts. And now it is time for what you came here for, the Helwani Show. On this Wednesday, March 18th, 2020. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. I hope you're doing well. You didn't think we'd leave you hanging, did you? Of course not. We're here for another episode of the program. And no, I am not in our usual New York City studio. I am at home, much like most of you, trying to forge on, trying to survive, trying to do the best we can under these very trying times, but also trying to stay home because that's what we're told to do. This is an unprecedented era in our life. This is a time that we'll be talking about for years and years. They'll be doing movies about this time, but most importantly, we hope that everyone is safe and sound, healthy, doing okay, keeping positive, and listening to all the smart people out there who are telling us what to do, which now appears to be stay home as long as possible. Now, it's crazy to think about how much has changed since we last spoke a week ago. I was in a tiny room with Chael Sonnen, and now that's way too close. That was like, 4 feet. We'd be defying the orders of the government. 6 feet, at least. A lot has changed. UFC did have an event on Saturday in Brasilia, closed off. We wonder now if this is going to be the last event for a very, 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 very long time. But we still have a lot to talk about. And so on today's program, we're gonna go old school, a little MMA beat roundtable, if you will. It's me and two of my closest friends in the business. We got New York Rick at his home, and we got Mark Ramundi across the country at his home. So first off, New York Rick, are you there?
I am here, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to hear from you. And Mark Ramundi, are you there?
I too am here, Ariel. How are you?
It's good to hear from you, Mark. And of course, back wherever he lives in the minimalist cave is TST. TST, are you there?
I am here in lovely Bristol, Connecticut. Okay.
TST, thank you for manning the ship and making this happen. It's not easy to do these shows from home, but we wanted to make this happen for all of you. We missed out on Monday's show, but as you may know, we've been doing the IG live streams on the ESPN MMA Instagram page. Hope you've been enjoying those, but we are going to forge on and continue to do the podcast now, audio format, and we'll see how things go. So much is changing in our lives. First things first, let me start with Mark. Mark, around 2 or so weeks ago, you were ridiculed in Las Vegas for asking a legitimate question about the future UFC events in the midst of the spread of the coronavirus. How do you feel now considering what has happened? Who would have thought 2 weeks later we'd be in this position? Or maybe there were some people who thought we'd be in this position and maybe they weren't listened to properly. In any event, when you saw this all come to fruition, was there a part of you that thought back to that question, you being booed out of the T-Mobile arena, and said, you see, it really was a legitimate question?
Well, first of all, I can't believe that wasn't even 2 weeks ago. That was not even 2 weeks ago. I think it was 12 days ago. It seems like an eternity. It seems like forever ago. I can barely remember it at this point. But I mean, I'm not going to gloat. This is way too serious of an issue to say, I told you so or anything of the sort. Because truthfully, I really had no idea that any of this would happen the way it has happened. I mean, the fact that the entire sports world in the United States and beyond is suspended indefinitely is surreal. I can't even wrap my brain around it. When I asked that question of Dana White about how the UFC might be affected by the coronavirus, I had no idea that the card the next day would be the last one possibly in front of actual fans for a while. Of course, UFC Brasilia was last week in front of no fans, and now we really don't know what the future is going to hold. Three fights are off, three events are off. The UFC is still pushing forward with April 18th, UFC 249, Nurmagomedov versus Ferguson, but this is a whole new world. It really doesn't even make sense. It's so crazy right now.
New York Rick, how do you feel about the state of affairs, not just in our sport, of course, but across the entire universe?
Yeah, I mean, certainly not the circumstances one would want or desire, but I do think that there is a coming together kind of the MMA community, which has been nice to see. A lot of people, fighters and coaches included, putting out tips on workouts for fans and fellow fighters to be able to stay active while people are being self-quarantined and things like that. So, again, not what we would hope or want, but I do think that this is a bright moment for the MMA community and their ability to kind of come together and rally together, in this time.
Yeah, it is amazing that, less than 2 weeks ago, as you said, Mark, we were in an arena with 15,000-16,000 people. And now the thought of that happening in the near future, in the distant future is really like just like a pipe dream at this point, talking about September, talking about, games not being played in front of people for God knows how long. It really is amazing how quickly things have changed, and perhaps we should have listened to people a little sooner and hopefully it doesn't get worse. But the one interesting thing as it pertains to our sport is our sport, mixed martial arts, and in particular the UFC, was one of the final global sporting organizations to forge on, to hold an event this weekend while everything essentially shut down. Now, of course, now, several days later, the UFC has shut down essentially, like all the other sports leagues. They were trying to put on an event this weekend on a tribal land in Oklahoma, Shawnee, Oklahoma, to be exact. They finally said, okay, we can't do this given the restrictions on groups of people larger than 10 in the same place. So that event has been postponed, as they're putting it. I personally think it's a cancellation, because it's not like the same event is going to happen all over again in the same place with the same fighters. A postponement is more of like a rain delay, but whatever, that's semantics. Also, the March 28th event, which was supposed to be in Columbus, has been moved to a later date. It was supposed to be in Columbus, then Las Vegas at the Apex, but then Nevada said no more events. So then they tried to figure out a way to continue with that event. That's obviously not happening. April 11th in Portland isn't happening. April 18th, though, they're still saying is going to happen. Before we get to April 18th and the Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Tony Ferguson fight, Mark, let me ask you this. How did you feel while watching the event this past weekend in Brasilia? Charles Oliveira with a great win over Kevin Lee, but it did happen in an empty arena when essentially no other sports were being played. What were the thoughts going through your mind as you were watching this?
It was very strange. I mean, all thoughts running the gamut from I'm happy that there's some normalcy that I get to watch fights. It's a Saturday for the last, more than a decade of my life. Pretty much every Saturday means some kind of a fight sport. So that felt good in a sense. It almost felt like comfort because it was something familiar, but also in the back of your mind, you're thinking like, should this fight really be going on? I mean, I know from a selfish perspective, I appreciated the entertainment with everything else really not happening, but I was also thinking like, is it really a smart idea for the UFC to be bringing as many people as they are into one place, especially now looking back and knowing what we know now about the spread of this virus and how easily it can pass from one person to another? You see someone like Randa Marcos, who fought on that card, saying that she feels like she may have symptoms of coronavirus. She's not feeling that well. She's trying to get tested in her home in Michigan. So it's mixed feelings. And I'm going through a lot of mixed feelings, man. The last few days, and it's just like it's been a little bit of a roller coaster of emotions, and most of them not positive, I have to say, but I'm trying to keep positive, because at least for me, there are a lot of people worse off than me. This is affecting the whole world. It's touching every single person on the planet right now. It really defies belief.
Yeah, and it's kind of reminded us that this is a very big world, but it's also a very small world when you see us dealing with the same things that people in Asia are dealing with, in the Middle East are dealing with, in Australia are dealing with, all over the world. It really has made the world seem very, very small. New York, Rick, what did you feel? What were you thinking when you were watching that event on Saturday in Brasilia?
Yeah, like Mark, a bit of mixed feelings. Definitely felt comforting in some way to know that this routine that I have had for so many years is kind of continuing. But at the same time, I couldn't help but feel that Charles Oliveira or Gilbert Burns, shouldn't they have deserved to have that moment in front of, you know, multiple thousands of Brazilian fans instead of in front of an empty arena? It just felt like the stage that had been created for this, the platform that had been created for this, for these fighters to have this moment, was taken away from them. Now, certainly there were plenty of people who were able to watch on ESPN and watch on ESPN Plus. But I think there's something that's, irreplaceable. In terms of the fan support and that energy that is provided by the fans. So I felt like Charles Oliveira and Gilbert Burns had a moment kind of taken from them almost.
Am I crazy, or after a while, did it not really seem like it was happening in an empty arena? Of course, there were moments when Michael Bisping is like, give it up for whoever he was talking about at the time, maybe Renato Moicano or someone, and obviously no one's there. Or when Joe Martinez is trying to get, you know, the fighters riled up and there's no real reaction. But after a while, because we had been programmed, you know, by watching The Ultimate Fighter, and remember Tough 14 happened at the empty Mandalay Bay. The fights for the most part always were in that empty warehouse. And the way they lit it, I thought was really good. And the way they shot it, I thought was really tight. After a while, Mark, did you forget like I did that these fights were actually happening in an empty arena?
While the fights were going on, it just felt like I was watching regular fights. It didn't really feel like it was an empty arena fight. It was only before the fight and after the fight where it kind of set in that, okay, there's nobody there. There's nothing. There's no reaction to what's going on, to the fighters talking or the results being read. I was talking to Bia Malecki, who fought on that card, and that's kind of what she said. Like during the fight, you know, she's ultra focused on what's going on in the fight. She doesn't really hear the crowd even when there is a crowd there, but when the result is read and she's the winner and no one cheers, it's so strange. It was very surreal. And I felt the same way watching from home. During the fight, it seemed like a normal fight and I was into it. And then after the fight, it was like, where's the reaction? Where's the fans? Like, where's the energy? There was none. It was, it's bizarre. It was bizarre.
I agree with you guys that, you know, it felt a little weird. It felt a little off for the most part, especially when we found out that the fight was actually happening. But as long as they weren't defying the government's advice or defying any rules or anything like that, any regulations, then all right, you know, they're able to do it. And they obviously turned down all the fans and they're trying to make this as safe as possible. Where it started to get a little weird for me was when they decided that they were going to continue with the following week's event, which is supposed to happen this Saturday in London, but not have it in London, and then look for a tribal land, and then look to cobble together a card with, you know, a bunch of fighters who aren't even in the UFC. I reported the email that was sent out to managers where they were saying, you know, we're open to non-UFC fighters. Then I started to think like, okay, what are we doing here? Because it's not like we're trying to save this card. It's like we're just trying to put on a card for whatever reason, the sake of putting on a card. That's when it started to feel weird, and it started to feel like we were going back to the early 90s where we're running away from government regulation as opposed to trying to do things, you know, via the state athletic commissions. It was like the early 90s where we're holding events, you know, with tribal commissions overseeing them and doing things that everyone else isn't doing. So that started to feel a little strange. And then we're talking about putting fighters on the card who aren't UFC fighters. Then what exactly are we doing? Did you feel that way, New York Rick? Or again, did you feel like, okay, this is a way to bring some normalcy into our lives? If they're able to pull it off, all right, you know, good on them. They're able to pull it off.
No, I'm completely aligned with you. I think the idea of quote unquote like saving a card, if it is the same card, made sense to me. Being able to execute Brazil, and if they had been able to execute London quote unquote as planned, that felt okay to me. That felt like, hey, we're trying to do our best and do right by the fighters that are on this card and continue. But once it started becoming clear that this card was not going to continue as constructed and we're going to get a quality of product that wasn't what was originally planned for UFC London, that's where I started to think maybe this is not the best time to proceed. At that point, you know, if you're not getting Tyron Woodley, if you're not getting Leon Edwards, and all of a sudden this is falling apart and the rest of the card underneath is no longer the same, what's the point? Why not just delay at that point?
What do you think, Mark?
Again, a lot of mixed feelings, and pretty much the same thing that you guys felt. Like, If the card was going to be the same card, I mean, I thought it was ridiculous when Dana White said on Saturday night that they were trying to move UFC London to the United States, and it was going to basically be a card, a makeshift card put together through, you know, newly signed fighters and, you know, pretty much whoever was available. To me, that's not the UFC. That's not the UFC. That's not, they were going to call it a UFC fight night, but it really wasn't going to be a UFC fight night. It was going to be a few fights cobbled together on Native American land in Oklahoma, which I feel like that's almost, you know, a step back and a downgrade to what the UFC is supposed to be. Now, I understand the mentality. I understand the adamance to try to continue to put on fights, because people do want to watch fights. I mean, I know that there are certainly a host of different opinions on this, but I do feel like a lot of MMA fans do still want to watch fights. It's just not possible. You know, it's just not possible to do it. And people need to grasp that. But I do understand the UFC's mentality to press forward, because that is just what they do. They're just, they're always full steam ahead. And that's kind of the mentality they kept. But I guess in these times, the reality sets in and you just can't be full steam ahead. You have to kind of take precautions and take measures to make sure this damn thing doesn't keep spreading.
I know you talked to a lot of people this week, Mark, not just fighters, but managers and coaches as well. I've talked to a lot of people as well, and I haven't talked to a single manager or fighter, I do think this is worth noting, who has said, I'm happy they canceled the events. All of them wanted to fight. And I'm not saying they're right, because I obviously disagree with the idea of continuing to fight, because I just don't think it's safe and healthy. But all of them wanted to fight because they don't get paid if they don't fight. And that speaks to obviously a potential larger issue. Like when we talk about, you know, the NBA players, the Major League Baseball players, the NFL players who may not be able to compete this year in the, you know, the interim, They're not losing out on money. You don't hear those people saying, we need to continue to play on. We need to do this. But MMA fighters are more in the category of just everyday 9-to-5 workers because, A, they don't get paid a lot, and they only get paid when they actually compete. So a lot of these people are living fight purse to fight purse. They want to compete, and the managers want them to compete because they don't get paid if the fighters don't get paid. And so I haven't talked to a single person, as wrong as it may be, who was happy that they canceled the events, who wanted them to cancel the events. Did you speak to anyone who said that they were happy they were canceling the events and not putting them in that position?
Very, very few people. I've had the same experience that you've had for the same reasons, because if the sport is suspended, pay is suspended. No one's getting paid. No money is coming in. It really changes everything. And I've spoken to some managers who are worried about their business and worried about how they're going to put food, on the table for their families. And the same thing with fighters and coaches. Gyms are closing. I mean, it's very tough. I did speak to a few people who were, I wouldn't say they were glad that the fights were canceled, but they just didn't like being kind of in limbo. Eric Spicely was one of those people that I spoke to. He was supposed to be fighting on UFC Columbus. And when Dana White said last Thursday that the fights are going to move to the UFC Apex, then he said on Saturday that the fights were going to be moving somewhere else. Eric Spicely was he just didn't like being in limbo, and he didn't like having to kind of wonder what the hell was going on and if he was going to fight at all. If the fight was off, then say it's off. If it was not off, then, let's move forward and find a location and stick to that. But that was kind of more the feeling of some fighters, where they just kind of wanted some semblance of stability and normalcy. But no one wants to stop fighting, because stopping fighting means they're not getting paid. And this is going to be a reality for a lot of fighters. And a few of them have already spoken about it. Julian Marquez on Twitter. They don't know when their next paycheck is going to come, and they don't know what they're going to do to make money. And that's the reality for fighters right now. And it's the reality for a lot of people. A lot of people are going to lose their jobs over this. People we know, some of our loved ones, people in our families. It's truly the most, it's a disaster, but it's not a disaster in that, like a natural disaster or a war. People are dying, but as far as the economy and as far as jobs and as far as that kind of thing, everything is unknown. No one knows what's going to happen over the next few months, and no one knows how long it's going to last. It's so crazy. I have not processed it fully. I feel like I'm trying to process it as I'm talking to you guys right now, but it is so crazy.
Yeah, it really is. And also worth noting that the fighters who were scheduled to compete, not only on the London card, but also the Columbus card, the Portland card, they don't know if they're getting paid. I would think that it's a long shot that the Columbus and Portland fighters are getting paid. There's a case to be made for the London fighters to get paid, because some of them, like Ashley Evans-Smith, Marvin Vettori, were already in London, had already flown to London, and were ready to go start cutting weight, things of that nature, gone through an entire training camp, and they still haven't been told if they're getting anything at all. Worth noting that Bellator paid its fighters that were scheduled to compete last Friday at Mohegan Sun, but there's an argument that, all right, they already went through the actual weigh-in. It was fight day, and then they pulled the plug on the event literally hours before the event. And so we hope that they get paid. I don't know if that's going to happen. It's a tough situation to be in. So everyone's not only losing fights, but they're losing money as well. And then, Yurk Rick, how about the situation for one Leon Edwards? Here's a guy who had won 8 in a row, scheduled to be in the main event in his home country, scheduled to fight a former champion, had to get Tyron to agree to fight him in London. That took a while. This is the opportunity he was waiting for, a chance to cement his spot as the number one contender at 170, lost out on the Masvidal fight. A year ago this week, they get into the altercation backstage, doesn't get the fight as a result, sees Masvidal get a big fight against Ben Askren in July, International Fight Week. He has to fight RDA on a fight night in San Antonio. And now here he is finally about to cash in, and that gets taken away from him. And now it seems like there is a movement to just take that fight away from him, period, because Tyron's talking about Colby, who tried to save the day, and Gilbert Burns is in there and whatnot. If you're the UFC, what do you do with Leon Edwards?
Yeah, it's a tough spot. It seems like every time Leon Edwards is going to get that opportunity that's going to push him to the next level, something happens in one way or another. You spoke to Tyron today on Instagram Live on the ESPN MMA page, And he said essentially that he took the fight with Leon only because Colby said he wasn't going to be ready. And now that Colby appears to be ready and throwing his name into the hat, he's much more interested in that fight. So it's a very difficult position for Leon. You feel for Leon because, again, this was potentially going to be the one that put him into that title contention and got him that title shot. So I don't know. If you're the UFC, I think you have to put on – I think there's a responsibility for you to put on the fight that the fans want to see the most. And if I was putting myself into the fans' shoes, I think Tyron Woodley versus Colby Covington is that fight. I don't think that Leon Edwards is in that equation, unfortunately.
Wow. Mark, what do you say?
Wow. Man.
Wow. Cold-hearted.
Talk about kicking a man when he's down, Mark Rick. Jeez. You know what? I can't say anything for certain because there's just so much up in the air. There are too many variables to even know what the UFC will look like in a few months. When it's all going to come back? I mean, are fighters going to get cut because of this? I don't know. I mean, are UFC employees going to get laid off? I mean, I'm hearing unemployment rates in the United States rising like threefold. So, I mean, there's so much to think about, to talk about. I don't even know if I can bring myself to talk about how the UFC might match a fight, you know, in 3 months or 4 months or 6 months or whoever knows how long. I really don't know.
Okay. But here's the thing. Hypothetically, right? Like, what is the right thing to do? Because I have a hard time. Look, I love the idea of Colby fighting Tyron. I wanted to see that fight for 2 years. That fight has a great backstory. Yeah. It should have happened already for the belt. And that's why when they were, you know, going forward with this event on Saturday, that was the fight to me that made the most sense because you had the built-in backstory. I mean, you really had 2 years worth of content. You could cobble together a great promo for that easy, put it on ESPN. Everyone's happy. It was the fight that made the most sense. And it was the biggest fight that they could possibly make on such a short amount of notice. But let's just say, for the sake of this conversation, normalcy resumes in 2 months, right? Let's just say. I know that no one is saying that that's actually going to happen, but for the sake of this conversation,
hope so.
How do you justify taking this away from Leon Edwards? How do you actually justify that? The man earned that spot. How can you just say, all right, we're sorry, you know, there was a pandemic, but hey, we're going to go in this direction because it's a bigger fight. How do you do that to the guy?
So
it would be unfortunate.
Let me look at the rankings here. So as currently standing, the UFC rankings have Kamaru Usman as champion, Tyron Woodley number one, Colby Covington number two, Jorge Masvidal number three, Leon Edwards number four. I'll go all the way to five. We have Stephen Thompson five, Gilbert Burns six. Is it not reasonable to potentially put together a Gilbert Burns versus Leon Edwards fight as a potential number one contender fight or something along those lines and still book Colby Covington and Tyron Woodley?
No, it's not right. If you're not going to give him Tyron Woodley, you got to give him a title shot. The man has done enough.
Eight I don't have a problem with that either. Again, and I should clarify, it's not an indictment on Leon Edwards as a fighter that I believe that ultimately that fight will not be made again. It's because I think that there's so much heat between Tyron Woodley and Colby Covington. I just think it's undeniable. That is a fight that should have been made a long time ago, and now there's an opportunity to get it. This is a reset. But certainly I wouldn't argue with you if you said Leon Edwards is next to fight for the title. I don't have a problem with that. I think he's earned it. I think he deserves it. I think he's as good as any of those guys listed. But you cannot pass another opportunity to do Colby Covington versus Tyron Woodley. You just can't. It's bad business.
I feel like Covington versus Woodley will always be there, although I could be wrong. And it would be heartbreaking to take away that opportunity from Leon Edwards. Especially, I mean, if they're looking to do another main event at some point in London, Edwards would make all the sense in the world because he's an England resident. He's lived there for a very long time. He reps England. So if they do want to run back that type of a fight card, it should be Edwards in a prominent fight against Woodley, someone like that. I just don't know what the UFC schedule is even going to look like, you know, in a few months. But let's be honest, it would really suck if Edwards had that opportunity taken from him because of a global pandemic and then the UFC went in another direction. But Eric, I understand what you're saying. It is reasonable that the UFC could do that to put on the, I guess, hotter fight between Covington.
I would point to two things. One, how many of those they'll always be there fights just never end up materializing? Like when you have the opportunity, you have to capitalize, you have to take the fights. And number two, I think we're forgetting that this whole dance requires two people. It's not a Leon Edwards versus who do you want to fight situation. Tyron Woodley himself doesn't want to fight Leon Edwards anymore, wants to fight Colby Covington. In fact, saying that's the only name I want to hear. So at a certain point, you have to go with what's reasonable. And it seems like all signs are pointing toward Tyron Woodley versus Colby Covington. If you're asking me, what does Leon Edwards deserve? Leon Edwards deserves to fight for the title, quite frankly. The guy is very, very good, has beaten a very high level of opponent, and I think he deserves to fight for the title. If you're asking me what's going to happen and what the fight to be made is, it's 100% Tyron Woodley versus Colby Covington.
So this brings up a very interesting topic to discuss, because I think you are onto something on your quick, and that's why I think the idea that these cards and fights are being quote-unquote postponed is somewhat disingenuous, because I do think if in fact it's going to be a while before these games, these fights resume and these sporting events resume, they are going to shuffle the deck. Because when you consider the amount of, you know, income lost, momentum lost, you're going to want to come out with a bang. And so I think if in fact Khabib and Ferguson don't fight on April 18th, who's to say that, you know, the fights don't return till September. And then at that point, Ramadan's over. Everything's good. We don't just put together Khabib and Conor because look, that fight does 2 million pay-per-views and we need money right away. So you're 100% right. There is a chance that the Leon Edwardses of the world get screwed. There is a chance that the Tony Fergusons of the world get screwed, because I suspect that when things get back to normal, hopefully sooner rather than later, but if it is in a while, they're going to try to put together the biggest fights possible. And at that point, everyone's probably healthy. Everyone's probably ready to go. Everyone's probably itching to go. Everyone's going to want to fight because they're going to want to make money. There's a good chance that not just Edwards versus Woodley, but Khabib versus Ferguson gets scrapped in favor of a quote unquote sexier fight. So you're onto something.
Don't you dare put that juju out there. Don't you dare.
Do you think I'm wrong? Honestly,
no,
do you think I'm wrong?
Right. It's exactly the same situation where, given the opportunity, if plans fall apart, and I think it's important to clarify that we certainly believe that this fight was intended to go on no matter what. Like this is entirely related, to the coronavirus pandemic. It has nothing to do with shuffling the deck just for the sake of it. But because of this opportunity, because of this reset, I do think that the biggest fights have to be made. Now, I think Tony and Khabib is one. I don't know. I just can't even talk about that. I can't even put that out there.
This is your fault, Eric. You know that. You Ariel was just applying your own logic to the Nurmagomedov-Ferguson fight. And he's not wrong. You're not wrong, Ariel. I could see the UFC doing that. They could be extremely aggressive going after the biggest possible fight that will make them the most money, because everyone is going to be losing money, you know, during this period, this downtime. I mean, everyone, not just the UFC, the entire country. Another question is, when the UFC gets back and running to pay-per-views, will people in this country have enough money to even pay for that type of thing? I mean, there's so many different things that we're not even, you know, considering that, you know, so many factors at play here outside combat sports. It's, I feel like I'm kind of struggling to find the words, because that's just kind of where my brain is at right now. I'm just kind of struggling to figure out how this is all going to happen and how it could shape the future of, you know, the sport that we love so much.
Yeah, I do have to say, yes, my own logic is being applied there, and I'm scared of the potential outcome of Tony and Khabib not happening. But the other part of what I said was that there's two people in this dance. Clearly, Conor McGregor wants a fight with Khabib Nurmagomedov. Khabib Nurmagomedov and his manager, Ali Abdelaziz, have long said that unless Conor McGregor faces Justin Gaethje, he will not fight him. Unless Conor McGregor works his way back up, he will not fight him. So if Khabib and his manager are keeping their word, the potential for that Tony versus Khabib fight to me still feels like the one that they will move forward with. But there's I'm sure a boatload of cash that they could throw at Khabib to do the Conor fight, and he'd have to think long and hard about it.
You make a legitimate point, New York Rick. Legitimate.
So as of right now, thank you for that, Mark. As of right now, Wednesday afternoon when we're recording this, they are working on trying to rebook that fight somewhere else, and they do want that fight to happen on April 18th. That's like the number one priority. They're working around the clock to figure that out. Now, on Monday, UFC President Dana White said on SportsCenter that there's a very good chance that the fight happens overseas, international location. Of course, it was supposed to happen in Brooklyn, April 18th, Barclays Center, New York State Athletic Commission today ruling that out. And we all knew that that was going to happen, and it's probably not going to happen in Las Vegas as well. So they're looking at international locations, and it seems like the surest bet is an international location. Khabib Nurmagomedov's father saying recently that the Middle East could be an option, Abu Dhabi, Dubai. Now, there's so many questions, as Mark has been saying all show long. Is it just a one fight card? Is it a pay-per-view? Is it on free television? If it's the full card, how are they getting everyone over there? How are they getting the corner man? How are they getting everyone on the same plane? How are they going to put the event? Will there be fans in attendance? Where is this going to be? Who's going to host this? So many questions, it kind of makes your head spin. But let's just focus on this particular fight. And let's focus on the idea of this particular fight happening in the Middle East. Let's just say Abu Dhabi or Dubai. New York, Rick, if you're Tony Ferguson, and I know you're trying to be a good soldier, and I know you want to get paid, and I know you want this fight to happen, you want to be the champion. Do you have reservations about fighting in Abu Dhabi or Dubai? Let's be honest. Khabib Nurmagomedov is royalty there. He's treated like royalty. We saw how he was treated in September when he fought Dustin Poirier. Is that unfair for Tony Ferguson to put it there? Would you say no if you're Tony Ferguson?
Tony Ferguson does not strike me as the type of guy to let that influence the decision. I certainly think you campaign for it not to happen there, but I think the reality is if that's how you're getting your title shot, and I think we have to acknowledge that Khabib is the champion, not Tony. If that's how you're getting your title shot and that's the only opportunity to do it, and they've explored options in the United States and it's not going to happen, I think at a certain point you have to relent and kind of just go full steam ahead into that. I think it's a point where you try to negotiate for whatever the best, home field advantage you can is. But if that's ultimately what the reality is and that's what you're left with, I would take it.
Is that your phone? Is that your annoying text messages?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
No one's more annoying to be around than New York Rick. For some reason, gets that annoying sound every time he gets a text message or any kind of notification. It's horrible. Mark, I understand that you spoke to Javier Mendez. The co-head coach, if you will, for Khabib Nurmagomedov, obviously his father, very much an influence on his career. What did he have to say about the training and about the prospects of fighting on April 18th? Because again, another thing that's not being discussed is, how are these guys going to train for this fight? If you want them to fight, if you want them to be at their best, if you want to see the best Khabib and the best Tony Ferguson, but everything is shut down around them, is that even fair to them to have them fight on April 18th? So what did Javier say?
So Javier Mendez told me earlier today that they're trying to keep a similar schedule. They're trying to stay as normal as they possibly can in very abnormal times. So Khabib has been training every day, 2 hours a day, as he normally would at AKA in San Jose. However, he's the only one training there. There's no one else in the gym. The gym is closed 22 hours a day and is only open when Khabib comes in with a handful of people. And that means his immediate training partners, his team from Dagestan, and Javier Mendez. Javier told me yesterday he was the only coach in the gym. It was just Javier Mendez, Khabib, and his training partners. And Khabib was still sparring Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, trying to keep to the same schedule, so, still running outdoors. But Javier told me that it's affected Khabib a little bit, but he's still keeping the same mentality that he's going to be fighting no matter what. Even if Tony Ferguson doesn't want to fight and that's something, happens, no one wants that, of course, but even if Ferguson doesn't fight, Khabib is adamant that he will fight April 18th if a fight is going to happen on that date. Another thing to consider too, which really interesting, is the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay Area, is under what they're calling a shelter-in-place order by the local governments. And basically, no one's really supposed to leave their house except for, going to do essential things. So I guess they're deeming, at least Khabib and his team are deeming training at AKA as essential things. But it's really interesting that, again, the whole world is being affected by this. And I feel like it's almost an interesting case because Khabib already has kind of a team with him that live with him when he's in San Jose training at AKA. So he's basically just moving the people that he's with all the time just to a different venue to train. So it isn't like he's being exposed or exposing someone else to a virus or someone's exposing him. It's kind of the same people that he's always with anyway. They're just moving from like the house to the gym. It's surreal.
And my apologies for Matcha. I don't know if you hear Matcha in the background. Sometimes
never apologize for the great.
Okay. Yes, she is feeling better. Thanks to all those who have asked. But TST got very mad when he heard her barking. He sent me a very nasty text just now telling me to keep her quiet. Like, what am I supposed to do? Dog's barking. There's dogs outside. She gets excited. She's all cooped up. What am I supposed to do, TST? Let me ask you this, New York Greg. How do you feel about the idea of them going on with this particular fight? Do you like this, or do you feel like we should just kind of shut everything down? Because no one else is trying to put on an event on April 18th. No one's trying to put – everyone's saying May, June. How do you feel about them being so confident that this is actually going to happen?
I don't even know if it's confidence as much as the realization that if this fight one more time gets postponed, canceled, whatever terminology you want to use for it, I think fan confidence in this fight ever happening would be at an all-time low, maybe even zero. I just think this fight has been so snake-bitten to this point. If one more time we're told that Tony versus Habib is not happening, but it's happening later, whatever the case may be, I think fan confidence in this fight ever happening would be at absolute zero. So I think they're doing everything in their power to not face that reality and not face that outcome, more so than they are in terms of being confident that they'll be able to put it on. I think they're exploring every possible option because this fight needs to happen for all intents and purposes.
If the fight doesn't happen for whatever reason, do you think they should just put their hands up and say, all right, we tried five times. This fight just wasn't meant to be. Let's move on with our lives.
No, because I don't believe in bad karma. And even though I was joking about the bad juju before, I don't believe in that type of thing. I think there's a reason that each time it did not happen, and a legitimate and good one. I think you just have to throw your hands up and book it again, or in the scenario that you laid out, essentially just move on and book Conor McGregor. But I don't know how quote unquote fair that would be to Tony Ferguson. But no, I don't think you just scrap the plan altogether. You just, you know, chalk it up to it, to another situation, another circumstance that's happened, and try to do it one more time.
And also, I wanted to clear something up. You guys posted a video. Well, first Tony posted it, but then ESPN MMA posted it on Instagram and Twitter of him training with that, a pad. Yeah. Habib commented that he was wearing jeans and a belt. In fact, I've confirmed he was actually wearing like dress pants, slacks.
That's so much better.
He's a hitman.
Yeah. So much better.
Hitman, you guys. He's a hitman.
But Mark, you actually came up with a great idea. In this time where the fighters aren't making money, and by the way, much respect to the sponsors out there, because I know there are sponsors who have said they can't pay, and I understand that it's a troubling time, but there are sponsors. I noted two of them on my weekly article on ESPN.com who have confirmed that are committed to paying the fighters during this time, and they should be applauded for that. But you came up with a great idea, Mark, about how Tony Ferguson can actually make some extra income. What was that idea?
I was completely serious the other day when I tweeted that I would absolutely pay to watch Tony Ferguson workout videos on the internet. He has the most unique workout videos on the planet. He pretty much did a pro wrestling match with that block.
Yeah.
That box jump block. He did a full German suplex with the bridge. I mean, I was enthralled. I would have plunked down $65 just to watch that. I'm not lying. I'm dead serious.
And it, you know, it goes back to what I was saying at the top, that I think fighters are starting to find unique ways to kind of reach out to fans and show them what's going on. And maybe there is a potential source of income there. I know Luis Smolka put out that he's going to be doing some sparring sessions on Twitch. I think John Dodson was doing something. Now, I don't know if there was a monetary compensation involved for the one that Dodson was talking about, but I know he went live on Instagram. I think fighters are going to have to get creative. That's just the reality of what's happening right now. And I think they are. And I think the platforms are available for them to be able to do that on social media and other platforms where potentially they could find some income during the downtime.
Yeah, we are lucky to be living in this time. I mean, the fact that we're able to do this podcast from home, the fact that, you know, I'm able to do the live streams, it feels like we're very much connected. Could you imagine if there was no power or if there was no internet, if this happened 30 years ago? I think a lot of us would feel a lot more lost and anxious. So it is nice to be connected. And I just hope, I want to see this fight. We all want to see this fight. It's one of the most anticipated fights of all time. I just hope that they're doing this in the most safe and sensible way possible, like not just forging on for the sake of forging on. It will be okay if we can, you know, sit at home and wait another 2 months to see this fight. It will be okay. I just hope that they're not, again, like I don't want to see them go back into the the 1995 era where they're running away from commissions. That to me doesn't sit well. It feels like we're taking a step back. So hopefully they're able to find, look, a lot can happen in the next month. So much could change in this world in the next month. Hopefully it will change for the better, but let's just wait and see. Cause I do think no one really knows what's going to happen. And the UFC doesn't even know. They could try all they want to make this fight happen, but in a month we could be told like, you can't leave your house, period. So it could be just a situation that they can't even deal with.
I think, everything that you said there is completely valid, and I have, again, mixed emotions about even trying to force this fight to happen April 18th. But, I've been reading a lot about all this, and I saw one thing yesterday that kind of almost gave me a glimmer of hope, some positivity. I saw that the Korean Basketball League in South Korea is planning on starting games up again at the end of this month, which is only a week from now, 2 weeks from now. And that gives me a glimmer of hope, because it seems like there are parts of the world that maybe are on the other side of it. You know, some countries who really dealt with the coronavirus very aggressively when it kind of first came up a month ago, or even in January when it popped up in South Korea. They're one of those countries that was very aggressive about testing and isolating people who had it. And it seems like they're starting to get back to a little bit of normal life. And I mean, maybe. You know, Khabib versus Ferguson in Seoul. I mean, who knows? But it does seem like there are parts of the world that maybe are on the other side of it. And that gives me, and it should give other people, kind of a glimmer of hope for the future. If we do everything right here, you know, if we take precautions now, then maybe, you know, in 4 weeks or in 8 weeks, we can kind of get back to some measure of normalcy and get our sports back.
And let me ask you, just for those that don't know, do you know when they suspended play over there?
So if they do return, at the end of March, then it would have been a 4 week layoff. They would have taken 4 weeks off. But South Korea, again, one of the countries that dealt with this the most aggressive. They really came out right away and made sure people stayed home. Everything, the entire country shut down. They tested, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, and they seemed to have it contained. I mean, from the reports that I see, but again, no one truly knows, you know, what's going on and what could happen in the future. It could come back. You know, they may have it contained now, and then someone throws, a party or a sporting event and people start getting the virus again. I also want to add that they are planning, to come back at the end of the month, but it's still going to be in front of no fans, of course. That's still a precaution that needs to be taken.
And to that point, as we start to round third here, I'm just curious, like how are you guys dealing with this? You know, New York Rick, you have a young daughter, your wife living with you, of course, in your lovely home. Mark, I know that, you know, you have your girlfriend with you. We all have different situations. I have three children. I will admit, as I mentioned on Twitter yesterday, there are moments where I feel very down, very overwhelmed. I've tried not to read the news. I don't know if that's smart, but I just needed a break because I felt like I was just refreshing Twitter and just seeing one bad thing after the next. You know, that day last Wednesday, which seems like an eternity ago, that 1 hour stretch where we found out about Rudy Gobert, and then we found out about Tom Hanks, and then we found out about, you know, the NBA season shutting down, and then everything else that came, and then the Donovan Mitchell situation. It just felt like the apocalypse. It felt like the world was coming to an end. And it was very scary. And then we don't even know what's going to happen in the future with the economy. And most importantly right now, our health and our safety. And we have parents and we're worried about them and we can't go see them. And we have young children and we have animals and all this. I mean, it's just, there's just so much you can get overwhelmed. And so that's why, you know, I have to be honest, like I haven't been listening to a lot of podcasts because I don't want to, you know, flood myself with coronavirus. And I'm happy that we haven't been able to talk too much about it, but I think you have to talk about it and you can't just ignore the news. I just don't know. I wanted to ask you guys, like, how are you dealing with this? And also if you have any suggestions of things that have helped you maybe take your mind off of it or things that you've been doing as you tried to cope with this new normal, so to speak. New York, Rick, you can start.
Yeah, I think I'm in a little bit of a different position than most people in the sense that, you know, my job for all intents and purposes is to create content on social media, run social media accounts. And we've kind of been able to do that at a decent rate without having to stop down. I can do that pretty much remotely. And a lot of my day-to-day functionality has been the same. So I definitely think I'm in a different position than most. And it's kind of allowed me mentally to just kind of stay checked in. Like I'm not really focused on those things. And I'm very grateful for that opportunity. I know a lot of people out there are suffering and hurting and their jobs are not going on the same way that mine is, but mine is. And so I've been able to kind of just lock in on the things that I need to do, with the addition of, while I'm at home, now I'm caring for my daughter at the same time as doing these things, and focusing a lot there. And that has helped me too. That's helped me tremendously, just being able to spend time with her and, you know, focus on our family. My wife, her job unfortunately doesn't allow her to take, you know, time off right now. Like, this is a situation where she's needed more than ever. So, she's in her job and continuing to do what she does. And I'm super proud of her and serving, people of our city of New York. And so she's doing that and coming home at night, and then we're spending time as a family. So, long story a little bit shorter, I've kind of been doing my same routine, and that's kind of kept me sane. It's kind of been, just doing it from a different location, but being able to work with you and, do that Instagram live that we're doing, every day for people, has been something that just keeps me, focused and kind of locked in. And, you know, what I would recommend for other people who are not potentially in that position is, something that I heard Ashley Evan Smith say yesterday, which I thought was a really nice thing to say, is, you know, try to find some humor in it. It's serious times, and there's going to be a lot of serious, conversations and situations happening around you. Try to find some levity, try to find some comedy, try to find, opportunities to have fun and laugh a little bit, so that your day to day reality is not just, you know, the opposition that we're facing, and finding some lighter moments.
Yeah, I mean, everything that Eric said, I'm kind of in a similar boat, because I work from home. I don't go to an office. So it's not a whole lot different for me right now. It really hasn't felt, my routine hasn't changed at all. It's only been, of course, a few days since, everyone was kind of told to social distance and stay home for a bit. So I haven't really done it much different, but I have to say, I have some, I guess concerns would be the right word, about, you know, what everyone is going to be doing for the next few weeks and months. And, I would like to open that up, you know, to the viewers and the listeners. What kind of coverage does everyone want? You know, what do you guys want to see? You know, what should we be writing about, talking about, you know, putting on, you know, ESPN.com, putting on ESPN social media, TV, so on and so forth. Like, what kind of content and coverage do you guys want? Because we can't be talking about the coronavirus in every article and in every discussion. It's just not, it's not feasible. We have to kind of do other stuff. So that's kind of my main thing, to figure out, you know, how we're going to continue to serve our fans and our readership and our viewership moving forward with no fights, at least for the foreseeable future. That's a concern of mine. And I'd like to get some input and feedback if that's possible. But as far as my life goes, I mean, it hasn't changed all that much. I think it will definitely feel differently in a week from now and in 2 weeks from now, when still home, not really doing a whole lot, you know, but I'm still working, trying to put together, you know, articles and so on and so forth. I'm kind of rambling here because I don't know. But yeah, I mean, so far it feels relatively normal, but it is weird watching TV and looking at Twitter and kind of being, you know, enveloped in all of this news, most of which is not positive. So, it is important to stay positive, like Ashley Evan Smith said, and it is important to find some levity in this situation. Also, another thing that's really important, we're kind of all in this together, right? I mean, we're all going through this together. There's not one single person on the planet almost that isn't touched by this in some way. So I've been actively trying to be, not that I'm not nice already. I am kind of a jerk most of the time. Let's be honest. I'm kind of a jerk. So I am actively trying to be nicer to everyone, even you guys, offline. So that's kind of been an important thing too. Be nice to people, you know, show people some love, check in with people that you haven't talked to in a while, see how they're doing, you know, see how these things are affecting them. That is a recommendation too. Let's try to stay close, even though we may have to be in separate places.
Yes, very well said. And I know a lot of parents are dealing with this as well. It's tough because a lot of schools are saying that you should, you know, continue with the education. They're giving you all kinds of assignments, but it's hard to do that. I mean, we have to continue our lives too. And you have kids who then get restless and they're distracted and they're at home. So I feel for all the parents. I know exactly what you're going through.
I have a son who's in the second grade, another son in kindergarten, and I can't imagine what it's like for a fifth grader or a fourth grader or a seventh grader. It's just tough times and everyone's trying to figure it out. My suggestion would be try to view the news like they did back in the 60s and 70s. The news came on at 6 o'clock. You watched it for 30 minutes. You read the newspaper in the morning. You didn't have things like Twitter and refreshing all day, constant updates, you know, getting updates by the centimeter, so to speak, by the inch. Maybe just take a break and don't flood yourself with this, because to me, at least, it kind of drives you crazy and it could be overwhelming. And also go outside if you can for a run, play basketball, play football, play catch with your friend, your brother, your sister, your son, your daughter. If you can go outside to get fresh air, just to get fresh air, to go for a jog or something, if you're able to do that. I know a lot of people aren't able to do that, but if you're able to do some exercise, even if it's in your basement, if you're able to run, if you're able to go on a bike, I think that really helps your mental health as well. So we're all kind of figuring this out, that you know, at least it's kind of nice weather here in America right now. It's March and it's been okay, but yeah, it's scary. And I do think that you're 100% right, Mark. We're all in this together. We have to be nice to each other and be kind and be as mindful of each other. And the main thing is, even if you don't feel sick, there's an older person next door at the grocery store who could get seriously ill because of this. So please be careful. Now, I want to end on a positive note before we bring in TST for his tip. And Lord knows we need some tips this week. Let's end on a positive note here, guys. One thing I wanted to ask you guys before we go, let's end on this note. And Mark, I'll start with you so that we don't end on this kind of somber, you know, the somber note. Favorite moment off the top of your head right now, this is something I was thinking about because I'm trying to think of memories and watch old clips and reminisce. Favorite moment covering MMA? Is there something that comes to mind? An interaction, an event? When I say to you, the privilege of covering MMA brings us a lot of things. Is there one moment that sticks out, a favorite moment? What comes to mind?
It's a tough question. I mean, there are so many, there have been so many great moments that, one of the ones that kind of comes to my head immediately is George St. Pierre when he won the middleweight title at UFC 217. Why am I forgetting this already? In New York at Madison Square Garden, he beat Michael Bisping, and I just remember him. You know, he had been out for 4 years, and people said he was done, and he tore two ACLs in that time, and somehow he came back and he won a second UFC title by knocking out, actually he finished Bisping by submission, and I just remember him staying in the cage at Madison Square Garden for a long time. People usually shuffle out of there pretty quickly to get to the back and, you know, possibly get some medical treatment, but I feel like he was in the cage for 20 minutes after the fight was over. It probably wasn't that long, but he was just kind of taking it all in, and that was just kind of a cool moment to see this legend. And for me, on a personal level, 4 years before that, I wasn't covering MMA. I never got to cover a George St. Pierre fight. And of course, he's one of the greatest of all time, if not the greatest of all time. So on a personal level, it felt really cool to experience that moment being just a few feet away from a living legend, one of the greatest ever, winning a second title and doing it in such an incredible, dramatic fashion. So for me, that was one of my my favorite moments covering the sport. Yeah, I'm not sure if I made any sense, but that was one of mine. Yes.
No, made total sense. New York Rick, what about you?
For me, in a previous life, it was the time I was able to do a poor facsimile of what you do and hosted the MMA Hour. That was a very special moment for me, because there had been no other host and there has never been another host. So. That meant a lot to me, and that was something that was significant in my previous life. And now in this new role, I would say I have two, and they're both moments where I was watching interviews and knew that there was gold here, which was watching back Brett's interview with Jorge Masvidal, where he said three piece in a soda, because I knew instantaneously that moment was going to be something huge for the ESPN MMA accounts. And then this most recent Yoel Romero interview with Phil Murphy, when watching that back and knowing that moment was about to be huge and kind of transformative for the ESPN MMA account. So as far as my professional coverage of MMA, those were the three kind of moments, two more recent on in my capacity as social media, and one rest in peace to the MMA Hour.
Yes. I'll just give you guys one, and those were great. The one that came to mind as I thought of this, April of 2010, Strikeforce Nashville, getting the opportunity to interview the athletes in the locker room. I love doing that because it's so raw. They're still sweaty. They're still tired. They're huffing and puffing. Interviewing King Muhammad Lawal as he's lying on the ground with the belt on his stomach in tears after he just beat Giger Mousasi to win the belt, the Strikeforce belt, saying that he was always second place, always the bridesmaid, never won the big one, and he finally won the big one. And I was sitting by his side, and he can hardly speak. And it was just so amazing to be there backstage in the locker room experiencing that moment with King Mo, a great guy who was always very good to me throughout my entire career. Those are the moments that as fans, you don't get to experience. As media members, we get to experience, and they're very special. And those are the moments that I think that when we're old, these moments that we're just talking about are the ones that will stick out. Great. I mean, I could talk about a gazillion moments getting to interview Conor McGregor after he knocked out Jose Aldo from nothing to something to everything. That will always stick with me. There are so many great moments, but the King Mo one comes to mind as far as a moment that I look back on and I say, man, that was a good time. So here's to many more of those moments. Hopefully we get to have them sooner rather than later. Hopefully normalcy resumes sooner rather than later, and we can all enjoy the fights again, because I think over time we will appreciate them even more. And could you imagine, I've been thinking about this a lot, could you imagine what it's going to be like when, like the spring, everything will bloom and everyone will come back to work, everyone will come back to the games, to the arenas, how much more we will appreciate these moments. And by the way, you can appreciate your family as well. I've seen a lot of families come together and do things together, and I'm certainly a lot, you know, closer with my family right now. Remember these moments, appreciate these moments, cherish these moments. There's some good that could come out of this nightmare for a lot of people. On that note, it is time for
TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week.
Aaron, if you want to ask me what my favorite moment was in my brief time covering the sport, is when I saw Colby Covington fight in December.
Even though he lost?
Even though he lost, yeah, that was a real buzzkill when he lost, and I could just feel, because like the place went crazy. T-Mobile Arena went crazy when he lost and Usman got the knockout. So that was, you know, the high of the prior 3 days in Las Vegas, knowing I was going to see my American hero fight, and then to have it back-ended with that. That wasn't great, but seeing Colby fight was awesome.
Yeah, I remember the look on your face. You were very depressed after, and you just kind of left T-Mobile.
I bolted. Yeah. I couldn't be there anymore.
Yeah, and I was thinking of you when he threw his name into that. I'm sure you were going nuts when all that was going down, right?
Oh, I was, yes. I was like, yes, Colby's back. I need more Colby in my life. And I was mad London got canceled, because I thought, all right, Colby's going to fight him in America. He's going to be an American hero. You know, everyone thinks he's this heel and he's going to turn into this great guy. Everyone's going to love him again. He's going to get title shots and he will fulfill, you know, me and you and New York Rick did a podcast at the beginning of January where we had our predictions for 2020, none of which may come true now based on what has happened here. But my prediction was that Colby was going to have the welterweight belt by the end of 2020. So maybe that will hold up. Who knows?
Yes. All right. TST, now more than ever, we need your tips. What do you have for us this week?
Okay, so as we are all locked in our own homes for the foreseeable future, this is a great time for minimalism and for evaluating every material possession in your life. This is a great time as we are home-ridden to go into your closets, try on what fits, what doesn't fit, and donate it. Go to donationtown.org like I threw out a few weeks ago. And also, a great thing that I have done is I've gotten rid of pretty much any paper products in my life. So I suggest, if you don't have one already, a scanner and a shredder. A scanner so that you can, you know, you have all those photo albums sitting on your mantle. Like, get rid of the photo albums. You don't need them. Scan all your photos. We have all the photos on our cameras. Like, put them all on a Dropbox, on a Google Drive, somewhere. You should have no photos lying around your house. They just take up space. We're in a digital world now. If anyone is still having scrapbooks and photo albums from family vacations 15 years ago, it's time to get rid of those. And furthermore, any documents, any important work documents, family documents, anything that you can think of, you can make those digital too. And then once you have made those digital and you have ensured that they are safe and saved in multiple places, that you can access them when you need them, you can shred them. As a minimalist, I have a paper shredder, and watching papers go through that shredder is one of the simple joys in life.
Wow. I didn't know that that was such a great joy for you. And by the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, TST, and thank you for that. That's great. I mean, we all have clutter around our houses, so all these things that we probably don't need. How are you doing? How are you holding up?
I'm doing well for now, and I would like to say that it's crazy, as you guys said, how quickly all of this has happened. Last Wednesday, we recorded a podcast, and you pretty much asked me the same question, how the coronavirus was affecting me so far. And I just said, like, yeah, some of my friends are freaking out about it. I'm not. I'm going to keep living my life. I'm going to keep going out and doing things and doing the things I love and going out in public places and whatnot. And I think that just kind of shows how naive I was, how naive all of us were, and how much we all underestimated it. Obviously, I have listened to the advice of all the experts now, and I'm staying cooped up for the most part. I am doing a lot of things you said. I'm exercising frequently. I'm going on walks frequently, getting the vitamin C, the vitamin D as much as I can. Work-wise, similar to Eric, I still have things going on, so I'm not totally lost. So I'm in a good spot there. Weird thing is, though, I live alone, and I live alone by design, and I live, you know, in a minimalist place, a very small place, also by design, because I try to make my living quarters not so comfortable, not so desirable, because my goal every day is to spend as little time in my home as possible so that I can get out of my comfort zone, so that I can go walk, so that I can go exercise, so that I can go meet up with friends, go out to breweries, go out to coffee shops, go out to restaurants, so that, like, in my free time, I am not so comfortable on the couch, complacent, watching Netflix all day. So now that I'm bound to the walls of my home, I am trying to do things every day to make myself better. I'm, you know, challenge creates opportunity. I'm reading a lot. I'm writing a lot. I am, listening to new music, discovering it, and I'm in constant communication with friends. Like this morning, I just got virtual coffee with my friend via FaceTime, and we caught up and talked about how we're dealing with this thing. So that's a thing I'm doing. And so I'm good mentally right now, but I don't know how long I can keep up like this, because we're all wired for human connection and human interaction. And I don't like being holed up all day, and, you know, I don't know how long I can do this before I go insane.
Hang in there, my man. We got this. We're going to get through it together. We're going to make it happen. I have faith in you. I remember the first time I heard about the coronavirus, I was in the Dan Le Batard studios in late January. I was there for the Heat Clippers game, and they made me read a SportsCenter update. Stu Gotts asked me to read it. What an honor that was. And I didn't know much about the virus. And one of the update notes was that Top Rank was canceling a card in China because of the coronavirus. This is in late January. And there was a quote in there from Bob Arum, the great Bob Arum, who said, I've got, and I'm paraphrasing here, I've got a big show to attend in Las Vegas in a few weeks, of course, Wilder Fury 2. I'm not going to go over to China and expose myself to some, quote, as he put it, cockamamie disease. And I have not heard the term cockamamie in quite some time. It was a very Bob Arum-like term. And I remember we all kind of had a laugh about it. And here we are, you know, less than 2 months later, and it has greatly affected our lives. So I hope that at one point we can go back to those days and laugh and be together and work together. But for now, we'll do it this way, and we'll keep doing it for all of you because we know that this helps you all as well, and it helps us too. It's a great escape for us as well. So New York, Rick, Mark, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. Be safe, my guys, and I'll talk to you guys soon, all right?
Thank you, Ariel.
I don't know if Mark's still there. He probably left. He's had enough. Mark, it was great to have you on wherever you may be. All right, TST, you can hit the music. Oh, there it is. Yes, I could sort of hear it. Listen, this is all happening on the fly. It's okay. It's a new day for all of us, okay? It's a new time for all of us. But look, it's the same time that I do the show each and every Wednesday. I want to tell you about a couple more things. I'll be continuing to do those Instagram live chats on the ESPN MMA page Monday through Friday is my plan, 1 o'clock. You know, there are lose one guest, surprise guest. That's great. So check out the ESPN MMA Instagram page if you can watch them. We're putting the top interviews on the YouTube page as well and highlights on Instagram, so you won't miss out. As far as Monday is concerned, we'll have something for you Monday. We're still working through that. As far as Ariel and the Bad Guy is concerned, I actually just recorded an Ariel and the Bad Guy episode. So that will come out not today, probably, because it's done a totally different way. But we're figuring out a way to get it up on either Thursday or Friday. I do also want to let you know that on Saturday, if you're looking for something to do, ESPN is airing 11 straight hours. Yes, they said 11 straight hours of UFC programming beginning at 12 p.m. Eastern. Amazing fights, classic fights like Jones Gustafson 1, McGregor Diaz 1 and 2, McDonald Lawler 2, what else? Masvidal Diaz, Gaslam, Adesanya, the classics. So if you have nothing to do on Saturday, sit at home, watch those fights, enjoy those fights. We're not going to leave you hanging. We'll be here for you at ESPN MMA, so do not worry. We'll still have a ton of great content for you. For now, though, TST, Mark, New York Rick, I'm Ariel. Thank you for listening. Be well, be safe, be healthy. I love you all, and I'll talk to you soon.